They're closing the drapes, Barb and Barry. Good morning. No Robert again today. Maybe never. I haven't seen him Friday morning at Sierra Club hikes because I'm here. Well, when this class is over, I'll be back to Friday Sierra Club hikes, and that's the only other place I run into him. Anyway, we have a guest speaker today. William Peters, Master of Education and MFT, maybe? Shared Journeys to the Afterlife, what everyone who is going to die needs to know. Not that one. How many do you have, Bernie?
If you're not going to die, do you need to know this?
You get a pass.
Thank you. I don't need to worry.
Okay. William Peters, that gentleman over there, is the founder of the Shared Crossing Project and director of its research initiative, a nonprofit that works to raise awareness and educate people about the profound and healing experiences that are possible for the dying and their loved ones. William is a global leader in shared death studies and end-of-life phenomena. He conducts workshops and presents internationally. William is a psychotherapist at the Family Institute of Santa Barbara, specializing in grief and bereavement. He served as a hospice worker with the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. William has had two near-death experiences and a variety of shared crossings that informed his perspective on death, dying, and the afterlife. William's work has appeared in the American Journal of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, Omega, Journal of Death and Dying, and CNN News. His best-selling book, At Heaven's Door, What Shared Journeys to the Afterlife Teach About Dying Well and Living Better, was recently published by Simon & Schuster. And do you have any copies here, William, in case anybody?
Yours works.
I have four copies here today. I just brought four. I never know how much interest there is. But Chaucer's has a lot of copies, and they're signed as well. So if you're interested, Chaucer's a good source. But I'm happy to sell them here today as well.
I want to say one more thing about William, which is I've known him for quite a while, and what I have remarked on over and over again is that he had a long time ago an understanding of purpose. Something happened in his life that gave him a purpose, that something that he needed to communicate to people that has motivated him for a very long time. And I'm sure that the process of making the Shared Crossing Project into what it has become was not an easy process. It was a very challenging process. But he just kept at it year after year, and it has eventuated into something that he's really making a contribution, and his contribution is getting widely recognized. So what I see William as an example of what positive psychology calls grit. That is passion and persistence for long-term goals. He just never gave up. And eventually, good things happened as a result. So I think you're a paragon of grit, William. And it's been wonderful to witness that.
Thank you. Oh, here we go. Thank you, Spencer. First of all, it's really wonderful to be back here because pre-pandemic, I spent sort of writing every couple of years or something, and always in this room. There was a smaller room the first time I actually did it on the other side of the campus. But it's great to be here, and it's just wonderful that everyone's back gathering. I took a break from speaking publicly during the pandemic. I mean, everybody's been listening on Zoom. But it just always feels better to look at people's faces and connect. So thank you for having me. And then, Spencer, what you call grit, some of my family members call workaholism. So we'll have to sort that out later. Maybe I'll come see you. But it does yield. And hopefully you'll appreciate what I'm sharing today. So, oh, by the way, I can pass out, I have sign-up sheets here if you want to get on the Shared Crossing mailing list. They're up here. And I also have a special one that is, if during my talk today you realize that, oh my gosh, I had a shared death experience. We are the leading researchers on these experiences, and if you'd be willing to give us your contact information, and we would interview you and collect your case for our research. But I'll leave these up here. Maybe at some point we'll pass them around. You might not even know whether you want to be on the mailing list or not. So, okay. So let's, thanks, Spencer. I don't have a slide of answers, so just forward it.
Okay, so I forward it with this. That's from here forward.
This is not long. This is
long. I don't think that was here.
So just go away. Okay, so this is what I hope to study or talk about today. I'm going to introduce the Shared Crossing Project and its research initiative. I'm going to review some of the most recent findings from our study. I'm going to introduce the shared death experience typology. I'll define that as well, so you don't have to know anything at this point. And then I'm going to really focus on these therapeutic benefits, because there's a lot of amazing end-of-life experience, a lot of mystical experiences as well. These are mystical experiences, as you'll see. But for me as a psychotherapist working in grief and bereavement, what matters most is that they have therapeutic value. They make your life better. I'm not so keen on just getting fascinated by the phenomena. It's wonderful. But if it doesn't change your life in any demonstrative way to be better, it's just a trip through an amusement park. And that's not what I'm about, and that's not what my institute's about. I'm also going to share something with you that's on the cutting edge of our research. It's called the conductor. And it seems like when I've seen these cases, eventually I started to realize there's some presence, an elevated consciousness or being in these shared death experiences that seems to have this role of transitioning human souls into the afterlife. You're going to understand this, but it's like an angel or an elevated being that has this responsibility of moving that part of ourselves that's survives human death from inside a human body or around a human body into an afterlife. And I'm going to show you some videos about that so you really get that sense of that. And then I'm going to talk a lot about, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about how to have these experiences or more information, I'll offer that as well. Okay, thanks, Spencer. So this is the mission of the Shared Crossing Project. We're really about transforming people's relationship to death and dying, end of life, through raising awareness about these most spiritual experiences that occur at the end of life. This is the research team for the research initiative. You'll see Dr. Michael Kinsella on the left. He's our chief of research. You'll see Dr. Monica Williams in the middle. She's our medical director. She's actually an emergency department physician. And then there I am. I bring in the mental health perspective. And what we value is that we're a multidisciplinary team. I should say that Michael Kinsella came from UCSB, the Department of Religious Studies. So we really look at these phenomena from a variety of perspectives. And we study end-of-life phenomena, which we call shared crossings. We collect, we analyze these phenomena. I've already said this, we focus on therapeutic benefits, and we advocate for education, not just in the healthcare system, but in the society writ large. So my view is everybody needs to know about this because everybody's going to eventually die. So what's a shared crossing? It's an end-of-life phenomenon that suggests communication across the veil. And it's a connection between people who are alive here in this human realm with people who are alive, no, they're not people, spirit beings who are alive, typically deceased relatives, that have continued to live in an afterlife. This is what we study. This is called the shared crossing spectrum of end-of-life experiences. I actually created this as a clinician working in grief and bereavement, as Spencer pointed out. And I was sitting with people, and I realized that as psychotherapists, we don't often ask the question, hey, did you have any unusual experiences when your loved one was dying? That's not something that we're clinically trained to ask our clients when they're in grief and bereavement. We're more like, you know, how are you feeling? You know, can we help you reframe what's happening? Can we help you let go of your loved one? Can you focus on the positive? Well, I realized that when I asked this question, did you have any, mystical, extraordinary, maybe weird experiences? I found over half my clients would say, and their eyes would open, it's funny you ask. I have this experience. And so, what these experiences became is the spectrum of end-of-life experiences. Now, I should say that I did a lip review when I started getting dozens and dozens of these, and I placed it in these categories. Most of these categories existed already in the literature, but I put it on a map with the hope that end-of-life practitioners of all kinds and just the general public can know that these are the experiences you can have. You can have pre-death premonitions. You can know that yourself or a loved one is going to be dying. You can have visions or visitations. If you're dying, of your deceased loved ones coming through and typically telling you everything's going to be okay, we're waiting for you, say goodbye, it's all okay. Synchronicities can happen throughout the experience. And that could be anything from, you know, you're just driving in your car and all of a sudden your deceased loved one's favorite music comes on. You're like, why? I was just thinking about that person and why does that music come on? Or you're thinking about your loved one and are having a big family gathering and all of a sudden the lights start flickering on and off. And you look at the clock on your oven and you realize it has the display has the date of your anniversary with your partner who died recently. These are things that as a researcher, I first said, come on now, this is a lot of wishful thinking. But as we started collecting the data, we realized these experiences happen all the time, far above the level of coincidence. The probability is too high. Other events are terminal lucidity. This is this physiologically unexplainable behavior that happens right before someone dies. It's something like someone with Alzheimer's will, and who's been unresponsive, semi-comatose for days if not months, opens their eyes, looks at people around their bed, and says to them in very cognizant way, how did your tennis game yesterday go? Oh, I realized that you were at that dinner party you had with your friend. That must have been fun, and people, the loved ones are going, what? And this person is having what we call a terminally lucid moment. It is recognized in the medical sciences, but it doesn't get a lot of attention because it does not fit what medical sciences believe is possible for a brain and body that's that compromised at the end of life. Shared enough experience I'll talk a lot about today, direct post-death communication. It's just this sense of soon after someone dies, what I hear is, it's like my loved one was in my mind answering questions that I was asking that I didn't even know I was asking, and yet I felt like I could sense and hear my mother, if it's a mother who died, and she was telling me things like, at the funeral, please make sure to seat Uncle George next to Aunt Mary. These types of experiences are quite common. Okay, we'll go in a little, this is the main map. We're not going to focus on this. I will say, well, yeah, go forward if you wouldn't mind, Spencer. I'll say a little bit more about this. So, my team wrote an article about this spectrum of end-of-life experiences, and it was published in the leading journal on death and dying, and you'll see why. Because we put it out there as a tool for end-of-life education, or tool for advancing death education generally. And you might say, death education? Well, in our culture, there really isn't death education. So, the mere point of bringing this up is also challenges the paradigm. But obviously Omega has an investment in solid research that tells us what actually happens at the end of life. And so it's been published recently, and it's getting really good reviews, which we're pleased about. Thanks. So the focus of today is the shared death experience. And so what is it? And this is, excuse me, let me get this picture. Okay, yes. It's an experience in which a loved one, caregiver, or bystander reports that they felt like they shared in the dying person's transition or journey from this human life into a benevolent afterlife. Benevolent's a key word because that's what we hear, a loving, joyous, happy afterlife. The dominant theme here is journey. It's as if the caregiver loved one is either watching, observing, or in some cases accompanying the dying on the journey. We also see the themes of love and understanding. Love are these sublime feelings that open their heart, a sense of gratitude, appreciation for being. And the understanding comes in a different way. It's more in the area of wisdom, a sense that they understand the purpose and meaning of a human life. They understand that we're all one. They understand that the suffering and trials that we have in a human life pale in comparison to the ultimate journey of a soul spirit in this beautiful universe. So that type of understanding comes through as well. Relationships appear central. What I mean by that is the bond between the dying and the shared death experiencer is typically pretty strong. It's usually a family member, a loved one, and in some cases, a healthcare worker who they feel very close to. And finally, the features of the SDE, the shared death experience, are identical and similar, if not identical, to the near-death experience. So we'll go over that in a moment. So here's a comparison between features of the NDE and the SDE. I know many of you in this course are really familiar with the NDE. So what you see in both are encounters with spirit beings, transcendent light, life reviews. That means as in the NDE, when you're kind of out of your body, if you will, you often have a review of your life. Well, in the SDE, the SDE experiencer will often observe the life review of the person dying. Unusual energy, altered time and space, heavenly realms, sense of presences around, tunnels and gateways, borders and boundaries. That means that there's a point to which you cannot go on. So you come back, you reach a boundary, and you're back into your body. Profound peace, the thing we hear more than anything else is, I just don't have the words to explain this experience. So that's ineffability. And finally, feelings of connectivity and unity. Primary difference, just to be really clear, an NDE, a near-death experience, happens when someone has a brush with death themselves. In a shared death experience, you're simply a caregiver, loved one, or healthcare provider. You are not having a brush with death yourself. You're healthy in mind and body. You're merely accompanying or observing the dying in their own transition. So, my team published the first journal article ever on the shared death experience in the medical literature. Very pleased to say that we were able to do that. It was based on 107 shared death experiencers, 165 experiences. Now that, you look at those numbers, you go right away, wow. That means a lot of shared death experiencers have more than one, and that is true. So it seems like there's a capacity that can be developed here. So just a little bit about this study, some initial findings. All work on the shared death experience that had been done previous to our study had only focused on bedside STDs. That means you're at the bedside of someone dying and you have these experiences. Well then, I expanded our research and started taking in all these experiences that had previously, because they weren't at bedside, been discounted. I said, let's take a look and see what we can hear about these people who have experiences that are not at bedside. What we ended up finding out was that there are about 64%, almost two-thirds of our interview respondents had an SDE that was remote. And the reason why we know it's an SDE is the phenomena were almost the same, identical. So we thought, oh my gosh, you can have this experience and not even be at the bedside. And that's important to know. Here's something that Spencer will appreciate, being the mindfulness guru that you are, Spencer. Two-thirds, 67% of our interviewees in our study had meditative practices or mindfulness practices of some type, whether that was prayer, meditation, yoga, tai chi. We even included regular walks in nature, because there's something about this ability to calm the mind, to attune to your bodily, visceral experience, and to the mind activity as well. These are practices that seem to enable or increase the probability of having an STD. So let me give you the first of our typologies for the STD. There are two main types. You can be at bedside, or you can be remote. That's pretty clear. Then there are two subtypes. And the subtypes have to do with time variation. Well, we found that about 9% of SDEs actually happen before medically determined human death, which is cessation of brain waves and cessation of heartbeat. 9%. We also found that 14% would happen a little bit after as well. So when we say a little bit after, that means, you know, hours or at most a day later. And the reason why we know that these are still SDEs is because they fit the pattern that I'm going to define a little bit later. We also found that we had about 12% would be multi-person SDEs. That means more than one person could have an SDE. So if someone's dying and you have four people around the bed, and then you know more than one of them have SDE experiences. They may have the same experience, but they could also have something slightly different than the other people. But they'd all be SDE phenomena. So here's the key typology that I actually think, I kind of created this one because I wanted to give people an idea for what is the experience of the experiencer. Rather than just looking at phenomena, we want to look at like a little bit deeper into what are they actually experiencing and what is their mode of participation or engagement with the dying. Okay, so the first one is remotely sensing from a distance. And the second one is witnessing unusual phenomena. That's usually NDE type phenomena. The third is accompanying the dying, so moving with the dying into the afterlife. And the fourth one is guiding the dying. Now, I'm going to explain all these in detail. Go ahead, Spencer. So remotely sensing, by the way, these are not mutually exclusive. About 25% of our respondents have these remotely sensing. These are brief thoughts, feelings, or a sense of a presence at the time of death. We also have sudden onset of physical symptoms. And that means something like your loved one is dying of a heart attack in Kansas, and all of a sudden you are in your car in Santa Barbara and you feel contractions and tightness in your chest and difficulty breathing, and you pull over and you go, what the heck is going on with me? I feel like I'm having some sort of cardiac arrest here. And then you find out later that a loved one of yours in Kansas died about that time. These are sympathetic SDEs. We also have a good deal of these, unfortunately, with drug overdoses. We'll often have mothers who report having feelings of sweating and nausea, vomiting, body aches, difficulty breathing, and at the time of usually a child having an accidental drug overdose. That one is painful to hear, but it also suggests this really profound connection beyond time and space between our loved ones. Okay, so the case we're going to see here is with Don Bybee. Now, Don is going to be talking about an experience where she is sadly preparing for Sean's wedding, which is supposed to be 4 days after this incident. What happens, though, is Sean gets struck by a car and dies, you know, somewhat after, shortly after the incident. So you're going to hear Don describing this. These are two videos that we cut and put together, so you'll see a bit of a change here. You're probably going to have to manually do this one, Spencer. I might be able to do it. Yeah, why don't you just move it over here, then we just start it.
No. This person was nauseated, almost passed out, couldn't see, took off my glasses, everything went black. You know, then it came back right away. I almost told my husband that things don't happen so fast. You know, within 4 minutes, I'm getting a phone call that he was hit. And then just right after that, oh my gosh, that's so weird.
Just raise your hand if you didn't hear it, if you did not hear it. Okay, sorry. Okay, so what Dawn is saying here is that her son gets struck by a car, and then at that moment or soon thereafter, she feels him move through her body, and she knows that something's happened to him. She's actually an ER physician herself, and they go down to the ER, and she's just saying to her partner, he's dead. I felt him leave this earth breathing, and she knew, and indeed, sadly, he did die at that time. So that's what we call a sympathetic shared death experience. You feel the other person's transition. Yeah, John.
I truly have the physical symptoms being nauseated.
Keep going, yeah. Okay, so this is witnessing unusual phenomena. This is, or what do you call it? Yeah, unusual phenomena. This is mode of participation number two. We just did sensing death at a distance. That's mode number one. This is witnessing unusual phenomena. This is our most common. About 84% of our respondents will express that they saw something related to death. So what are the most common? The most common experience for a shared death experiencer is seeing the dying transitioning into an afterlife. That's the most common one, 51%. Then we see transcendent light. That means they either see a cylinder of light coming down from on high or a big light in the distance, very similar to a near-death experience. Sensing powerful energy, alterations in time and space, encounters with non-human entities. Those typically are described as angels or light beings or elevated beings about 16% of the time. We're going to see this one coming up right now with our next video. Sally is going to share with us how she saw the spirit of her mother leave her body. And then encounters with deceased loved ones about 13% of the time. So here's Sally with her mother. Sally's very expressive, so hopefully we'll get to see this one. Hopefully the volume will be up higher. Oh, maybe you can go over there. Oh, yeah, put it all the way up. Yeah, yes, Spencer.
I saw.
Let's get this and see if we can make it pull over.
Yeah. There you go. There we go. Oh, you can go a little higher.
Okay, let's try it again.
Full bore.
This membranous tight.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh, you did it.
Okay.
10.
So this is it for what it's worth.
Okay.
Thing come away from the whole periphery of her body, and it was defined. It was definitely an edge, and as it came apart, coming up from the body to fill this thing was like this gray stuff. And I say stuff because, you know, I've been thinking about this since I talked to you guys, and I just cannot put my hand on anything specific to tell you what it was like. I mean, yeah, foggy, no, it had a little more particulate stuff to it. It was something in this form at this time, solid enough that it was still in a three-dimensional thing for me to see. So, it moved though, it congealed, and it slowly came together around her. And this membrane, and I think this had to be three-dimensional, but I could only see two dimensions in this thing. So this membrane opened like this and started going up towards the corner as a little bit, like a feather edge started going up, or the grayish stuff started going up with the tunnel. I call it a tunnel. I don't know if it's three-dimensional. Anyhow, and as it started to go up, the rest started to follow more solid. Now I'm picturing the room. I'd say about halfway up to that corner, it started going a little faster from the body and the corner and a little less fast on the corner, where it started to disappear, this tube, and the edges of the tube anyhow. And it just kept going up. And soon it was all out of her body, and almost all disappeared at the top until the very last bit went up there. Once she's up in the corner there, I'm looking up there, I know she's up there, and I feel this love come into my body. It just was so wonderful. It poured into my body, you know, and I didn't get goosebumps or anything. It just was love and filled me totally. And I smiled, and probably was, I don't know if it was more than smiling, but I know I was extremely happy, extremely happy. After a while, she was back. I think she was looking at them. And then after a while, she came back to me, and she sent me a message. It wasn't just the love that I felt before. It was different. It was like, oh, I am so full of joy. I am so happy. This is her. And I felt that. I felt her.
So was the volume better on that one?
It was better?
Good. I'm glad. Okay. So just to recap, what you see here is Sally has this visual experience of seeing what she describes as her mother in a membranous form, leaving the upper part of her body, going up the wall into the corner and kind of stopping right in the corner below the ceiling. And then she has a relationship with her mother. She has some communication. Her mother tells her, I'm happy. I'm great. Everything's wonderful. And Sally has this sense of a continued relationship with her mother, right as she says that her mother's soul, spirit, whatever, left her body. And this is a type of what we call witnessing death-related phenomena. Yeah.
I saw this membranous type thing come.
Okay, so here's the third type of mode of participation in the shared death experience, accompanying the dying. This happens about 15% of our cases, and it usually is this type of out-of-body experience, often going into a visionary realm, a heavenly realm with the dying. There is a progression that's happening, usually an ascension heading upwards, often towards the light. The landscapes are beautiful, hyper-alive. Often they reflect or are similar to our own landscapes here in our human realm, earthly realm, but oftentimes they're more galactical in a sense, they're more like space-like. And then the experience reports having a special type of knowledge, like understanding everything, like everything made sense to me when I was in this space. And then they come to a border or some sort of boundary that they're not permitted to go beyond. Okay, so the case we're going to see here is, I tried to select some cases that were local from Santa Barbara. This is Sonia Fairbanks. She's a local Santa Barbarian. Some of you may remember a woman who taught women's groups in Santa Barbara. She's called the Red Tent Circles, Denny LaTurrell. Denny is dying in Santa Barbara. This is about 7 years ago now. And Sonia happens to be in Massachusetts. And we're going to listen to what Sonia's experience is 3 hours, you know, in front of, time-wise, Denny. So, yeah, let's try this one.
Hi, Denny.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Good job.
At 7:30, I said, I have to lie down. I lay down in my clothes on her bed. I never found out what the actual time of her death was, but that would have been 4:30 California time. I was aware that I was on this journey with other people who felt, I remember turning around and looking at just lots of people, and I felt like excited. I stepped off the boat and I was on sand. I looked up, and this was the most amazing part, where I looked up And it was sort of just crowds of people around me. I looked up and there was Danny, like just looking straight at me. And I thought, wow, like, wait a second, Danny's on this journey? Like, she's sick. Like, why is she, like, this is kind of a hard journey. Like, why is she here? But she was super excited and she wanted to go. And I was like, well, there seemed to be like some able-bodied people around. And I thought, well, we can help her go. But then she looked to me as if like, you can do this, Sonia. Like, and I felt this tremendous responsibility, like really me? Like, why are you picking me? There's all these other people that can help you up these stairs. But then I just went for it, and everyone was behind us. Like, Danny wanted to be like in the front. We started going up the stairs, and it just seemed like they were endless. Just we'd go up, and there were more and more. And I started feeling like we were sort of in the sky, and my sense of responsibility was like really intense because we would sometimes sort of falter. She would kind of falter, and I would like, you know, be grabbing onto her, like, you know, I'd feel myself shaking. It was a pretty intense kind of feeling, like I was responsible for making sure that she didn't fall. As we continued up, I looked up and became aware that there were actually people waiting for us at the end of the stairs, and it was very high. There was no more scenery. Couldn't see any earth, sand, anything anymore. We're in the sky. And yet, I got the sense there was a room we were going to. And I looked up and there were two women. They looked like they were kind of in Renaissance dresses, you know, like big poofy, satiny, rust-colored dresses. And they were super excited. They were like, she's coming, you know? And, I actually kind of started having this feeling like, oh, she's the guest of honor. Like, and then I actually had a sort of selfish feeling like I didn't want to give her up because I recognized that she was going to be like the center of attention when we got to the top of the stairs. We got close enough and they kind of pulled Danny into the room, sitting down on pillows, and there was going to be a dance performance. She was really happy, but there was this sense of waiting, which I questioned later, especially knowing how she passed. It was as if the timing was off, and I can't explain it any other way other than like too early. And because there was this sense that there was supposed to be a spread of food and I knew it was going to be there, like this massive spread of food, but it wasn't quite ready. And also the dancers weren't quite ready. And she did, when she sat down, she had this like beaming face and she said, I made it. And that was just awesome to hear. And then I started having this sensation, just intense electrical kind of vibration in my body. And it was so strong, it felt like it was literally being pulled in an upright position. It was also a really wonderful feeling. It was wonderful because it was just like bliss, but I didn't want to leave. And I knew that I suddenly became aware in just like this split moment that she was dying. And that when I woke up, I wouldn't be there anymore. And I kind of woke up like literally with tears flying out of my eyes. Like I was so upset. And I actually aloud said, Danny, I love you. Like, and then I woke up.
So that is a rather descriptive shared death experience. It is that third mode of participation in the sense that, as we call it, a company. Sonia moves with Danny when she sees her across, kind of standing by the river, and then she begins this journey through a variety of landscapes, and eventually heading upwards. Now keep in mind, remember the dominant motif in the SDE is journey, and journey to somewhere. And then as she journeys up, she arrives at what we call the welcoming party. So there is literally a gathering, kind of a celebration, and Denny even says, I made it, I made it. So much is going on here in terms of the experience that Sonia is recording to us, but it fits well with what we see in these experiences. Okay, so the next type of mode of participation is... Oh yes, assisting the doctor. So this is a really spectacular one. So not only can you get called in just to accompany the dying on their journey, you can get called in and be asked to guide, to assist the dying in their transition. And oftentimes when you have that experience, you may not even know how to guide, but you learn as you get there. So this is going to be a case with a local individual whose name is Mark Tollefson. He used to be the director, executive director of Fairview Gardens. He's a friend, and he shared this with me. So yeah, we'll try this one. This is with, Mark is with his father. His father's in Canada in a hospital, and Mark is in New Jersey returning from a week-long wilderness adventure trip he was guiding. So he's just in the passenger seat when this experience happens for him. Oh, should we see what the setting is and the volume? Oh, you did already? Oh, I'm sorry, I missed it. I had my back turned.
You know, there's that connection that we have with other people we love, you know, like in particular with my father, I had that connection. And I still do. I can feel my father as I get to check in on, you know. And so I sent my spirit to the hospital where I knew he was. I remember going to him at the bedside and speaking to him, saying, you know, Dad, I said, why don't you just let go? You know, Mom's gonna be all right. All us kids are going to be all right. You can go. There's nothing holding you. And he looks at me. The puzzlement was in his face as he said, I don't know how. And I knew right away, as soon as I was there with my dad, I picked him up. And I started that meditation, you know, walking down this particular trail. And at a certain point, he turned and stepped up these stairs and walking towards the light. So we're walking side by side. And I took him to the light. And as we got close, my father and my grandmother had a really, really close and beautiful and amazing, magical relationship. As we got close to the light, you know, there was like a door where the numinosity of the light coming out of there was just lovely. And my grandmother steps out of that light, and she's standing there, and my dad, the look on his face is just so peaceful and beautiful. And as we approached the light, my grandmother and my uncle both, first my grandmother stepped out of the light. And they were very, very close. And so again, it's the look of joy on his face when he saw my grandmother was just like the look I hadn't seen in his face in years and years and years. And he just went and hugged her. My uncle came out of the light at that point, and he joined Frey. The three of them were just you know, the joy was just unbelievable. And you know, none of them touched me. Yeah, they were very, 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 very clearly that I wasn't part of that group. But you know, that my job was done. Like I brought my dad there, and now they had it. Was really how it felt. And they didn't speak to me either. And then my dad, he just turns and looks at me, and it's just this huge smile on his face, and just said, God, I didn't know that it was this easy. I woke the next morning, and the phone rang, and it was for me. And I answered the phone and said, it was my brother. And he said, you know, Dad passed away. And I said, yeah, I know.
So that is an assisted SDE. It's our fourth mode of participation. And what's wonderful, among other things about Marx, is that you see that he has a direct contact with his father. He even says that he picks him up spiritually, if you can imagine that, and carries him towards his father's mother and essentially watches them embrace and gives his father over to his mother and his uncle, and then they go into the light behind. So, a beautiful story, and one that we actually see different pieces of at various times in the accounts we see. Okay, let's go on to,
you know,
so here's the major after effects that that we see, and this is really why these experiences are so important. Belief that the deceased loved one is alive and well about 67% of the time. Now, once again, you see the all of these are asterisk. In other words, what this means is that we did not specifically ask these interviewees, we didn't ask all of the interviewees. It wasn't standard protocol for us to ask these questions. So these came out naturally in what we call a semi-structured interview. So these are the low numbers, not the high. Convinced of an afterlife, about 87%. That means that they would just say to us, I know I go on. I know I survive human death. I know I'll see my loved one again. Enhanced grief for reconciliation. What that really means is that your grief process is essentially better than a typical standard grief process. Doesn't mean you don't miss the loved one. Doesn't mean you're not heartbroken. What it does mean is that you seem to have a greater capacity to understand and make meaning of the death. So your heartache, while strong, is not debilitating. Reduced fear of death. This is 52%. I'm sure this is closer to 80 or 90%. We just didn't ask the question directly. Renewed purpose in life. This is people saying, you know, after that experience, I felt like I had a new lease on life. I felt like I understood why I was here. I felt like I really need to live into my purpose for this lifetime. So just to wrap up what we learned in our study specifically, remote SDEs are more common than bedside, the most common after effects. I've already gone over these, but just so you can see that. And the third point here is over 40% of our experiencers had more than one SDE, which suggests that this is either a gift that people have, but that doesn't hold up for me as well as the second hypothesis I have, which is these can be trained. I think we can train people to have these, and I've been doing this now for a decade. And when we work with people on this in a very specific way, they're able to have these experiences. Now, not everybody, of course, but about 25 to 50% of the people that I work with and train will have an SDE. About 90% will have some sort of shared crossing experience. I already showed you that chart earlier. Typically, it's an after-death communication of some type. And here's a powerful one. 25% of SDE experiencers report having an ongoing relationship with their departed loved one. So, you know, either through synchronicities or communications or, you know, dreams or visitations, what have you. All right, I want to go into this feature now that I've really become kind of fixated on. It's the conductor. But while I do that, I want to, because at the end, if people do want to get on our mailing list, I'm just going to pass this around. If you don't want to be on the line, but it's going to be, it could be a lot of people that want to do that at the end and have to go. So if you just pass that along like that, that'd be great. This is for people who have actually had experiences. So if you actually had experience you wanted to share with us, I could pass this around too, but I suspect that's a little bit smaller. Write clearly if you don't mind. Thanks, Spencer.
Actually, that one, okay. Yeah, so there are two things coming around. You get two things.
Yeah, two will come around.
And one, two, if you have a shared death experience, to write on that one. Make sure you know which one you do.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the conductor. So if we could slide advance here. Thanks, Spencer. So this is what the conductor looks like. from the initial studies, which I've been doing now for about 3 years, probably have at least 50 cases. And that is that it appears in different ways. It can be larger than life as a human form, if you will. It can also be angelic. It can look like a light beam and even have wings. Sometimes it's not visible at all. Sometimes it's just sensed. And you feel like there's this force out there. You can't see it, but you know that it's managing this process. And so the other way that we see this is that the characteristics are that it has a intention. It's very purposeful and working in a certain way with a sense of urgency. It's like there's a timing that it's trying to work out to really manage a successful, optimal transition of a soul spirit consciousness from a human body into the afterlife. Okay, this first case we're going to see is of Angela H. Now, Angela, you're going to see right away, is British. She's going to be sharing an experience with her mother-in-law. She's going to be talking about walking almost into the room where her mother-in-law is dying. She stops and she realizes there's something, there's a bubble there that she realizes there's a, like another dimension where this is taking place. And then she'll tell the story. Now, her husband, which is interesting now, think of this. As a family therapist, I found this fascinating. Angela is talking about her husband's mother's death. And he's just listening with his arms crossed. So kind of check this out. It's rather humorous. Okay, here we go.
Kind of way, it's saying, what are we going to do now? I was doing it well, they were going a bit faster and a bit of an urgency was going on. So I said to Dorothy, she's definitely died. And with that, Dorothy comes barging past me into the room. And as she got into the room, and she disappeared into the corner.
Okay, I hope everyone got a chance to hear that. I see some people saying they couldn't hear it. If you didn't hear it, just raise your hand. Okay, just a few. Okay. So what Dorothy's talking about here is, but not Dorothy, Angela. Dorothy's her sister-in-law. Angela's talking about, she walks into this room where her mother-in-law is dying, and there's a number of things that happen, but the thing that I'm focusing on here is the conductor. What she sees is this large white angel that's huge. Doesn't have a head, but it's kind of glowing. And then a smaller one is kind of near it, but off to the side. And this big, large angel is making this motion right here with his or her wings. And it's almost as if, in my interpretation, coaxing the spirit out of the body. And you can see, and that's what Angela sees, is this membranous form coming out of the body. And the little angel, which in my interpretation is like an apprentice, is kind of learning. It's a little bit nervous, actually, as it's going on. But they're two there have this job of conducting, of moving a soul spirit consciousness out of Angela's mother into an afterlife of some sort. So that is one example of a conductor. And let us go to the next one here. Hey, Spencer, how much time do we have? Do we go to the top of the hour or do we stop early?
We could go to, we usually stop at 5 minutes up, but we could go to
okay. Afternoon. Let's just see, I want to have time for Q&A too. Oh, and by the way, as these, there's two going around of these sign-ups. The orange one is if you've had an experience, and the black one, you'll say, is just to get on our mailing list. So just to know that there's two.
I didn't.
Okay, so you should know this individual. You should know him, but I'm saying many will know Rod Latham. Rod Latham is a playwright in town, really active in the arts community, and he had a profound shared experience with his mother. And he'll talk about that, but what I want you to focus on is that there's this mysterious man, or this mysterious being that he describes that seems to be orchestrating his mother's transition. So let's listen closely and we'll ferret it out as we're done with it.
Enunciate, Rod.
Pardon me?
I'm telling Rod to enunciate.
Yeah, speak loud, Rod. He has such a loud voice. I want to give him justice.
The walls and the ceiling of the room kind of just went away. And I felt like I was sitting in some kind of an arena, I mean, a huge arena, with people literally 360 degrees around me, more people than I could ever identify. But one by one, they would kind of make themselves present. There was this man who kind of was, going back to that arena visual, he was kind of like up and, you know, up in the cheap seat ticket area, you know, and I'm like, but somehow his presence pulled my attention amongst everyone around him. I don't know why, but I kept looking at him because I'm going, no, I don't know you. How do you fit into all this? Of course, at the time, I didn't even realize to think about the fact that all of these, this multitude of people is like, I didn't know most of them. But at least the ones who were coming through were people I knew. And I remember looking at him, and he was kind of like, no, pay no attention to this guy. And I kept going, well, who are you? And why are you here? And why am I noticing you? Because I don't recognize you at all. And he just said, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm here for your mom. Not to worry, no problem. And he was very unforthcoming. He did not want
did not want to talk.
And that struck me as really fascinating and interesting that there would be someone there, and ultimately a lot of other people there that I didn't know, that had no connection to that life term of my mom's, yet he was there for her in this moment. And there were more and more people who, kind of when I started wrapping my brain around this, more and more people would just kind of nod to me and go, "Yeah, you're catching on here. You know, we're not to worry. You don't know us, and it's okay that you don't know us." So in the play, I called him the Mysterious Man because I never got a name, and I don't know who he was or where he came from. And my assumption is that he was a guide or a one of Mom's team, because I think we all have teams around us that we are aware of or not aware of. But I kept going back to him because there was something about him that felt like he was on a different hierarchy, a level, than a lot of the other people that were there. It's kind of like if you were in a stadium, you know, in Roman days, you had all the townspeople filling up the space, but then there was the box where there was the emperor and there was the queen or whatever. You know, I don't know that he was necessarily the ultimate guide, but I was fascinated, and I'm still fascinated by this hierarchical levels of experience. Because I think when we move on, we're depending on how old our souls are and how much experience we have, we always have so much more to learn. And I think we get routed to, you know, to where we need to go to learn the next level of knowledge. And I think his knowledge was just from a higher plane, from a higher level of knowledge.
So Rod really takes some time to try and figure out what this mysterious man's all about. And this is just a snippet from a 2-hour interview that we did with Rod. But once again, here it is, you see this figure, spiritual being, seems to be, by Rod's definition, kind of wiser, more in charge, and a bit in an observatory but functional role. That he says, "I think he was on my mom's guiding team, like guiding or doing something." So you could just say the conductor is a spirit guide, but in my experience, the conductor usually has more of a forceful role, but a forceful, not aggressive forceful, but this more of a managerial thing, moving things around. There's an urgency and an intention. And the mysterious man, as in this case, sometimes they're distant. The conductor doesn't want to have contact or be acknowledged by the caregiver loved ones. Sometimes they want to talk to the caregiver loved ones, but more often than not, they're more just doing their jobs, and they're not that interested in those of us who are caregiver loved ones. Okay, so that's the conductor. Let's see what's next here. I only have a couple more slides. Oh, this is my experience I had with my father when he died. And I think just in the interest of time, I'm going to skip that. It's okay. Okay. So a lot of people will ask, how does the healthcare system relate to the shared death experience? What's the response? And the truth of the matter is, we don't, in medical sciences, have a way to understand most spiritual experiences, quite frankly, and certainly not one like this. And so what happens is, and we found this in our interviews, is that the experiencers feel very uncomfortable or ambiguous at best sharing their SDEs with healthcare providers. And this is what we find, that most responses are either, see the three lower bullet points, curious, but neutral and unable to be supportive. So if you're sitting at a bedside in a hospital or a hospice when someone's dying, oftentimes you'll get kind of a curious, kind of kind, but very neutral response. Sometimes you get dismissed,
And that means, oh, you're just having under stress from a loss of a loved one. And sometimes it can be even harmful, like, you know what, we're gonna have you assessed for a psychological evaluation and then often put on medication. So we're working hard to change this in the system right now. Go ahead, Spencer. So like I said, the current SDE, and near-death experiences as well, they can't explain it, they can't account. You know, the sense that consciousness is dependent on a human body and brain, this SDE and the NDE suggest that consciousness is not dependent on a human body and brain, that a consciousness survives the brain death and physical body death and goes on. And that's why you have these communications during the death process and afterwards. The last thing I want to say today is that over 38% of the people in our research express concern about being dismissed or ridiculed. This is why we have not heard about the shared death experience in our culture. That is changing. Because now, you know, the research that my team has done, the recent book I published is really getting out, and people are starting to talk more about this. In fact, a friend told me he was at a funeral a few weeks ago in Goleta, and the person said, I had a shared crossing experience, and I want to explain it. And I thought, and he said to me, shared crossing experience? And they were talking about the shared crossing experience as if it was common vernacular. That's the goal. We're trying to get to where people, all of us, can talk honestly about a shared crossing experience and specifically the shared death experience when it happens. Every interviewee expressed gratitude for having a safe place to share their stories. So if you do get on our mailing list, what you'll do is a few times a year we have what we call shared crossing community gatherings. We just had one on Wednesday night. We do it in the Crockett McDermott Mortuary, which has a beautiful chapel in it. We have 50 to 100 people, and we give research updates, but then more importantly, somebody in our community will share a story. And last week it was Marie Murdoch, who's a well-known author in this town, and she shared an experience when she was a teacher, an elementary school teacher, and she talked about one of her students who died of cancer. And he came to her, and she was meditating, and she had a meditation. He came to her in her meditation, took her by the hand, walked across a beautiful meadow, said, I love you, and walked into a forest and disappeared. That's a shared crossing. They're happening all the time. I'm seeing people fill out this list. So I just want to ask right now, raise your hand if you think you've had a shared crossing experience, just if you think you have one. I mean, that's phenomenal. That's at least 9 hands out of a group of, I'm guessing, 45. Mm-hmm. Yeah, middle of that. Yeah. So
9 hands.
Okay. So that's that's almost 20%. And that is what I think the number is, actually. I think about 20 to 25% of the American populace has these experiences. That would be close to 80 million people. And so, okay, I'm going to take questions. I thank you for listening. I apologize for the low quality in the projection on that. Yes, go ahead.